Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Today on CityCast Chicago, Coper releases footage of police shooting and killing Dexter Reed. A judge has ruled on the future of the Obama Center. And happy Eid to all who celebrated the end of Ramadan this week. Here with me to make sense of it all from the Invisible Institute, Myra Kwaja, and Crane Chicago's Corley J. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Let's get in the mood with a little theme music, with a little Sam Thousand real quick. Like, that boy really killed that intro. Like, every time I hear those horns, I'm just like, Sam, you different, different. You're different, different, man. Welcome to the podcast. Myra, welcome back to our weekly roundup.
Thank you. Thank you. So excited to be here.
No, we are happy to have you here. And Corley, you are one of our most familiar guests to listeners. We are happy to have you back.
Hey, what up? Thanks for having me.
Before we jump into the big stories from this week, as well as the stories we want to draw attention to, let's start with a little chatter. Yesterday, we ran an episode about the unwritten rules of CTA, as well as our biggest dreams for CTA. And as you can imagine, some of people's biggest dreams was, you know, just show up on time. Show up when you say you're going to show up. And so I want to pose the same question to y'all, and I want y'all to dream big. Myra, as you look into the future of CTA, if you could have one big dream accomplished in the years to come, what would it be?
I love this question. Thank you for asking. My dream big is I wish our trains were as clean and fast and reliable as like the Paris Metro. Just like it goes, you can get everywhere you basically want to go.
Mm-hmm. I experienced it for the first time at the top of the year. And yeah, I understand now what people mean when they start bragging on them European trains. I get it. I don't want to be giving Europe all that credit, but
I've never been to Japan. I hear it's even better, but but in terms of like my like midterm goal or dream, the showing up on time and just reliably being like, okay, in the next 10 minutes, I'll get this train.
Mm-hmm. I think people's biggest problem in the pandemic era of the CTA is not that the gaps are there, because we would like for those to be shorter. We'd like for those to be less often. It's the fact that once you tell me I'm waiting 10 minutes and then I wait and nothing shows
right,
up,
right.
That's when I'm really pissed. Mm-hmm. Corley, I want you to come in here. What is your biggest dream for CTA in the next few years, decade, however long you think it's going to take for them to get to it?
I'm really feeling the red line extension, you know, to the far south side, right? But my dream big for the CTA is it to come where the Metro comes. I catch the Metro, and because I live in West Pullman on the Ashland Racine stop, and if the CTA could come the same way, I would love that, because Metro, they schedule, you know, they stop running at a certain time and don't come on a week on Sundays at my house at my stop, so I have to drive to Kensington to get on Metro.
Yeah, on the south suburbs, you might be looking at an hour to 2 hours between Metro.
Yeah, it's insane. So my dream big goal for the CTA is to come to that Racine stop with Metro stop, so it can come more frequently. I know that y'all complain about it not coming, but CTA is more frequent than Metro. So.
This is true. This is true. I appreciate how personal your dream is, too. You was like, you know what? We got a lot of projects out there, but if it could come near my house, that's what I would appreciate.
Is that selfish?
My dream, which I was talking about.
It's fair.
Hell no. This is why we having a conversation, because of our personal experiences, but also to put them in conversation with others. And for me, it is not only do I want the train to come further and further south, but if on the south side, we had an east-west CTA.
Right.
Like something that could get you from, you know, Ashburn, Marquette Park, all the way over to South Chicago, South Shore. That is where I'm like, I think about it and I know we talking billions and billions of dollars, a ton of political will. But if we could get more trains to move east and west that weren't just coming out of the loop, That would be my dream for CTA in the decades to come. And so, you know, we putting them out there. If you all who are listening have big dreams for CTA, you already know where to find us. 773-780-0246. Leave your name, your neighborhood, and your dream for CTA. And remember, we listen to these messages. The entire episode about the unwritten rules of CTA was born out of one of these emails, one of these text messages. So please reach out to us. If you are new to CityCast Chicago, every Friday we like to bring in some critical voices, and we bring y'all in here to break down some of the biggest stories of the week. And this week we are starting in a very tragic, very terrifying place because earlier this week, the Civilian Office of Police Accountability released body cam footage, numerous bystander videos, and 911 calls in relation to police shooting and killing Dexter Reed in March after they stopped his car in Humboldt Park for what they are alleging was a simple traffic stop. I have watched those videos and listened to those 911 calls. And to say that that was the hardest part of my week would honestly, it'd be an understatement. The way the tears sort of just flow as you are taking this. And Myra, I know you also look through those videos, listen to what COPA had to say, and also was present as activist organizers and Reed's family have called for a thorough investigation. Can you kind of make sense of what we know so far out of this investigation?
Yeah, to make sense of it, a tactical team in the 11th District on the West Side, which is the part of the city that disproportionately has the most traffic stops.
10% in one district.
Right. 10% of the city's stops all exactly. happens in one small district. And it is also disproportionately Latino and Black people who are stopped. And this car was supposedly pulled over for a seatbelt violation. However, what you do see in the videos is that the windows are heavily tinted. There is, you know, very suspect that you would actually be able to see that. And that is something that the attorney for the family and the family and activists have pointed out as well. So this tactical team of plainclothes officers, got out of the car, and the first officer, she walks up to the car and she, almost immediately starts pointing her gun, but she says, roll down the window. He starts rolling down the window. And then they say, roll down the other window. And he's like, okay. And is trying to comply. He starts pulling up the window, not clear if he intended to, but she starts like yelling a lot then, pointing the gun at him and trying to open the door and says like, open the car door, open the car door.
Can I ask something very quickly?
Yes.
From the moment the officers get out of the car, we're at about, in one of the body cam footage, we're at about 1:08 when the first three officers hop out, within 16 seconds, by 1:24, the officer who at this point has only, as you just point out, has only said, roll down your window, roll down the other window, what are you doing? Is now within 16 seconds, forcefully grabbing at the car door, trying to yank the door open. In this 16 seconds, not a single individual has announced that they are police. 3 to 5 officers have hopped out of an unmarked vehicle wearing plain clothes, jackets, ball caps, hoodies, tactical vests, and are now yelling, cussing, and grabbing at this door. Again, we're talking 16 seconds at this point.
Guns drawn.
Guns drawn.
By at least 2 of them. And then I think from there, watching the variety of footage posted on COPA's website, I also want to name that all the officers' names are public. And though we say the name Dexter Reed all the time, a lot of media sources are not using the names of the officers because they haven't been criminally charged. This is public information, but I do think it is important to know that as citizens of Chicago or people of Chicago. So at that point, the officers claim that Reed shot at the officers, specifically the Black male officer on the passenger door side. His wrist is hit by a bullet and he doesn't have a gun drawn. Right. And so then that is the only officer that was shot and hit. COPA says that Reed fired first and fired 11 times, to which, officers returned fire 96 times. One of those officers fired 50 times.
While he was on the ground.
While he's not, even after he is on the ground bleeding out, firing three times. And COPPA has recommended that that officer be immediately removed from the force. Mm-hmm. I obviously COPPA has investigated more than I have, right? I will say that something I am hearing people say and talking to fellow reporters at other outlets is actually from the footage that we all see. I don't think you can say with certainty that Reed fired first. It is really hard to know, like, when those 11 bullets happened. After the shooting is done, two officers you see from their body cam footage do come look into the car. You don't see from the body cam footage, but they confirm and say, oh, there's a gun mm-hmm. on the passenger side seat. So all this to say is when I understand the family's concern and call for, you know, additional investigation from a higher authority than even COPPA, though I do think COPPA's, like, you know, release of everything quickly, like, I do think, you know, we're seeing the result of a reform era towards transparency and so much footage being released so soon. I think you see that in COPPA, right? You see that reform impacting COPPA. You don't necessarily see that within the police department.
When you watch the actual footage.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Other than the officers repeatedly, that female officer, the first person to approach Dexter Reed, she repeatedly says to people, do not say anything, do not say anything. Like, so the police are aware of their surveillance and transparency. And so that is, like, an impact of reform. Now, mm-hmm. has it changed the way they approach anybody in terms of how has it changed these officers that shot?
It's horrible. Myra, I wanted to add also that those five officers on that tactical unit were already being investigated for another traffic stop a month before this even happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. COPPA leaders themselves have pointed out, right, questioning the circumstances of the stop, questioning the integrity of this tactical unit. Obviously, there's still COPPA investigations underway. The Cook County State's attorney is also investigating for potential criminal charges, but mm-hmm. that's likely to take even longer, and that's a higher bar. One of the things I've seen going on social media as this news has hit national attention, hit the blogs, is you see, obviously, the victim blaming. Right. The desire for a perfect victim in the comments and in people's comments. And again, that's the reason I point out sort of 16 seconds. I can't speak for how other people have tried to put themselves in the shoes and say, oh, you know, I've been stopped by police before and this has never happened. But have you ever had a jump out unit hop on you? Because I have guns drawn. Mm-hmm. It's one of the scariest things. I've also been carjacked before, guns drawn. And I'm telling you, in both of those incidents, in those first few seconds, you have no idea what the hell is happening. Mm-hmm. You have no idea who is in front of you. You have no idea, you know, what circumstance you have found yourself in. And so for people to try and reduce this to, oh, you get what's coming to you, as if 96 shots, for so long we were saying 16 shots. This is six times that. And to watch a person being shot more as they're laying on the ground, as they're exiting the car. And then to see, as Myra points out, the aftermath. There is so much in this video that happens before a shot is fired and so much that happens after the shot's finished that inform us about what so many people have said about the Chicago Police Department, that they come in guns blazing. And then in the aftermath, silence. Let's get our stories together. Mm-hmm. Let's everybody, you know, let's show concern for one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's really wild to me is that police always talk about how in fear they offer their life, like the other person isn't in fear mm-hmm. for their life. You're trained. You should be trained to de-escalate situations. That other person isn't, however, yep. and you are scaring them as well. And one thing that I love, the tribe did a nice piece before the video even came out, censoring Dexter Reed as a mm-hmm. person. They talked about his love for basketball, talked about some of the friends that he grew up with. And I think that that's important because of this aftermath, these comments that you see on social media, but just diminishing him as a troublemaker, you know, as a thug. But those complexities about a person gets lost. So I'm just, like, thankful that the tribe did that work and we get to see more in depth about Dexter and his life.
Mm-hmm. And they truly show this story as intersectional, because his story also is about the failure of public housing and being moved out of Cabrini Green in 2008. It's also about disproportionate stops in Black and brown neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that has been also interesting to think about and frustrating is that the danger posed to all the surrounding people on this residential street, and the fear, right? And, you know, if this were to have happened in a wealthier, mostly white neighborhood, like, would bullets be fired? Would they have fired off so many bullets, kind of like, you know, without thinking about all the other people and houses mm-hmm. surrounding it? It is really irresponsible and dangerous.
Activists, his family said they will be rallying outside of next week's city council meeting. And so, as said, we will continue following these updates. To get the latest, make sure you subscribe to our daily newsletter, Hey Chicago. You can sign up now at chicago.citycast.fm. Corley, I want to bring you to a story that really has been piecemeal for, you know, about a decade now, and that's the ongoing construction at the Obama Center. There has been yet another legal challenge from Protect Our Parks. They filed yet another lawsuit to try to stop construction, and a court ruled earlier this week. What did the U.S. Appeals Court decision say?
Yeah, the U.S. Appeals Court upheld a lower court's ruling saying the nonprofit failed to show any new proof of why the construction should stop. So Protect Our Parks has been fighting to stop the Obama Center from being built, claiming that it didn't conduct sufficient environmental reviews and is privatizing land by being built on Jackson Park. And they filed their first lawsuit in 2018. So the Obama Center actually has come with a lot of backlash, you know, from neighbors fighting for, you know, community benefits agreements, protecting them from being pushed out, from preventing taxes from going up. So this was another attempt to kind of save that land, which I'm surprised they're still fighting. I applaud them for that, since it's set to open in 2 years.
Right. I'm like, construction has been going on. If anybody has driven by, you know, Hyde Park Academy, what used to be Cornell.
Yeah.
I'm like, the streets have been torn up. Everything's been reduced to one lane traffic.
So I'll be shocked that they decided not now to cancel it. No, they got shut down again. I'll be surprised if they tried another attempt at getting things to stop. But the center is planning, like I said, to open in 2026.
Myra, you've also been following, as Corley put, the backlash around the Obama Center by way of the community benefits agreements, the attempts to get affordable housing protections in. You know, Woodlawn has a small agreement in place, but in places like South Shore, where the community has on record, right, at the poll said they want more affordable housing protections. And yet this project has sort of steamed ahead without any of those agreements sort of being set in stone. You know, how do you imagine this next 2 years of construction playing out as organizers and advocates are still trying to get something?
Yeah. So, two things that I think are important to remember is, one, the Obama Foundation and President Obama himself has always had the opportunity and been directly asked, and he's denied multiple times, that he could throw his weight behind pushing for housing protections. Mm-hmm. Now, in the state of Illinois, there is still a ban on rent control in our state constitution. And so in the place of rent control at this time, the ordinance that Alderman Yancey of the 5th Ward has put forward, many precincts in the 7th Ward have also just voted on to wholeheartedly embrace, is that the 5th, 7th, and 8th Wards that have faced dramatic rent increases and housing increases and just not nearly the support that they need, getting a package of protections for renters, condo owners, and homeowners. And so I am optimistic that that housing protections will be passed. There are things that are really fully within the city's control, things like an Office of the Tenant Advocate, because people facing eviction are not guaranteed representation right now.
Mm-hmm.
Funds to repair crumbling condos and buildings, so that, you know, predatory landlords often will just let a building go into full decay so that they just basically force people to leave. Mm-hmm. And so I know that there are housing organizers like Not Me, We and Stop, like in Woodlawn and South Shore have worked a lot on, you know, having those conversations with tenants and also forcing the city to take action. And so I do think that the tide is turning in terms of the Obama Foundation knowing that they are a reason that prices have skyrocketed since the center's location has been announced. The median housing price has increased by 70% in South Shore.
Wow.
South Shore is the eviction capital of Chicago.
I want to be clear here. I've ridden in a number of like Ubers. I've been in the neighborhood. I've lived in both South Shore and Hyde Park during this entire saga. And I've heard from neighbors who are excited about it, who are like, oh my God, a presidential library center, community space, you know, right. Tennis courts. I don't know if they, right, some basketball courts, but we'll see how much people get to use those. But like all of these things coming to my neighborhood on its face sound great. The idea of South Shore, Woodlawn, Hyde Park being seen in this light, tourists coming. But what people have asked for from the start is just, can we be seen in this process? Mm-hmm, can we be protected? Not only promising us jobs at the center and how many new jobs and new businesses will come, because you can't guarantee that to me. You can't keep having this paternalistic relationship with the neighborhood where it says, give us this land, give us this opportunity to put this beacon here, and we promise new things will flood into this neighborhood. Because the truth is, people have been lied to before. So while this legal challenge has failed, it does show that people are not going quietly with this, and they will continue to fight even after that sort of 2026 good weather grand opening happens. People will still be demanding for years to come that the Obama Foundation, you know, put promises in word. We talked a lot about housing in this conversation, and recently President Joe Biden was in Chicago. I saw the picture of him on the tarmac with Congressman Danny Davis and Mayor Brandon Johnson. But his administration has also been talking about, how do we provide more rent control? To what level and to how many people that's going to impact, we do not know. But Myra, how much stock should we put in this conversation?
Yeah, I think the reason why this is an exciting sign is not because Biden is personally interested in rent control. It's an exciting story because it shows the way the tide is shifting across the country when it comes to housing organizing and people demanding tenants' rights. Like I just read something this morning that like 40% of Americans are financially struggling to live their daily lives, including like making rent. You're considered to be rent burdened if you spend more than a third of your income on rent. Mm-hmm. That describes a lot of people. And so the effort of organizers across the country to testify at Congress, work together and push the administration is showing that we are seeing success as housing organizing in the country expands. So to me, this is an exciting sign. It remains to be seen how that would apply in Illinois, given, you know, again, our ban in the state constitution on rent control, which we must organize and win to lift that ban. But that it is a positive sign of success in organizing.
As I said earlier, every single week, we like to bring in some amazing voices, our friends, to break down stories from the week. We have been joined by Invisible Institute's Myra Quadra and Crane Chicago's Corley J. But before I let them go, we got to end this episode like we end every episode, and that's with some good news. Oh, man, it warms my heart to sing that every day. Like, oh. That even makes me feel good. Corley, I want to start with you. What is your good news for the CityCast fam this week?
Yeah, so Inglewood has a new small business incubator called Colab Warehouse, which I wrote about. I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. So it gives aspiring business owners a chance to work in a space on the South Side. It's going to be, it is on 60th and Wentworth, and they just had the grand opening on Thursday. It's an initiative of this nonprofit called Male Mogul Initiative. So what the incubator will have is like machines to print and manufacture their own clothes, a storefront to sell the products, and different workshops as well. The membership starts at $20, and you don't have to be a male to be a part of the incubator. It's open for everybody. I really like this because I think it's cool that folks will have this opportunity on the South Side, you know, somewhere in their own neighborhood. They ain't got to go up north. They ain't got to go downtown to have this type of community and build and actually hone their aspirations to be a business owner.
Mm-hmm. I just love how practical it is, because it's one thing to give people workshops or ask young people to come in and like listen to somebody who's built a business, sit in front of them and tell them, oh, this is what you got to do.
Yeah, this is what you got to do. This is how you do it.
And this is what I did. Because let's be honest, you know, 50, 60 year old me, when a you know, somebody come in with a suit on, like, hey, I built three Heralds. I'm like, bro, I don't give a damn. Right. But what I appreciate is that, like, you're going to have the tools to learn. You're going to have the tools to apply, to actually try.
It's hands on, right?
Exactly. Yeah. To put up some product samples, and then you'll get the experience of actually selling that, bringing that to market.
Exactly.
So to know that people are going to get the opportunity to move from learning to ideation, to creating, to selling, really is a cool opportunity at this incubator. So I'm glad that you wrote about Collab Warehouse. And we're going to drop a link in the show notes for people who want to learn more.
Yeah. Thank you.
Myra, I love that when we first started talking earlier, you was like, I couldn't think of any good news. And then within seconds, we had so many pieces of good news that is happening.
There's so many good things.
What is your some good news today?
Yeah. So today I'm excited and celebrating 4 years of the best mutual aid project that, in my humble opinion, exists. It's called Market Box on the South Side. For 4 years, volunteers have been buying produce directly from Midwest farmers, packing it together among their families and children, and then volunteer drivers deliver it to homes, at least 400 homes every month across the South Side, of people who self-identify of needing access to the freshest produce you could get. That is majority low-income homes. Majority Black, but I'm really proud of just the hundreds upon hundreds of volunteers mm-hmm. that have poured into this project over the past 4 years, and just really being caring in the details mm-hmm. of checking in with their neighbors. And so I think, you know, when I need good news, I look to the good people of Chicago and seeing how they just show up for their people. And I think that's where you find the best news here.
We're dropping this link in the show notes for ways people can support. Also, I got to acknowledge that was a bar. Anytime I'm looking for some good news, I just look at the good people of Chicago. Put that on a shirt. Come on. One last piece of good news. It is very personal. I just want to give a huge thank you to Public Narrative for honoring me with the 2024 Uplifting Voices Award as part of the 29th Community Media Award celebration. Also receiving the award are Deanna McLeary Sherman and Natay Thompson, the co-founders of True Star Media, which is a multimedia nonprofit that puts young people at the forefront, whether it's behind the camera, in front of it, and so many other ways. I also want to give a huge shout out to the team at Borderless Magazine, which has been recognized as this year's Ripple Effect Award winner. The ceremony is on May 9th, and honestly, I just want to take this time to give all the thank you to my team at CityCast Chicago. I am only as effective as this team is. And so I am just grateful to the CityCast team and network for uplifting me and putting me in this position, and for Public Narrative for, you know, this humble honor of saying that, you know, my voice is one to watch for. So I'm very grateful. I'm very thankful. And also very overwhelmed. Like, this entire time I've just been playing with my nails as I talk about this, because I do not like to do this part. So,
man, it's so well deserved. Congratulations, Jacoby. Like,
yeah, and Simone, yes.
That consistency every day, basically, for 3 years, man. How
the grind is not going noticed.
Right.
Thank y'all so much. I have to give another huge thank you, because the truth is, CityCast Chicago is not possible without the people who come in and sit down with me and share their stories and the stories they were following. And this week, those amazing people were from Crane, Chicago. Shout out to Corley J. Corley, it was good to see you again, my friend.
I can't wait to come back.
Hey, you will be back very soon. I got you on the schedule, right? And a huge thank you to Invisible Institute's Myra Kwaja. Truly, my friend, it is always a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, always an honor to be here and be asked.
before we let you go, if you are new to CityCast Chicago, welcome. And I want you to know, we are way more than just a podcast. You could tap into our newsletter, Hey Chicago. Check out our neighborhood guides, our best food and drink list by visiting our website, chicago.citycast.fm. Now, I can't go without thanking the people who make CityCast Chicago possible. Our executive producer is Simone Alisea. Our producer is Michelle Navarro. Our newsletter editor is Sydney Madden. We had extra help this week from roving producer Lizzie Goldsmith, Natalie Rivera, and Adrian Gonzalez. The music we all love is from Mark Greenberg from the Mayfair Workshop, All the Kimonos, and the homie Sam Thousand. And my last thank you is for you, the people who listen to CityCast Chicago, who read Hey Chicago, who come up to me when they see me out in public and say what's up. Like, seriously, shout out to the folks who came by at the UIC Urban Forum yesterday. People like Bailey, Nick, Nina, and so many more. Thank you for making CityCast Chicago a small part of your Chicago story. And if you're new here, the best thing you can do is be back here bright and early on Monday. We'll talk to you then. Peace. Dun 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 d